So, Paul, in the passage just before the bit we've read in Colossians, is very worried about the very strict form of religion that has begun to take root in Colossae and looks, to all intents and purposes, like Christianity. And it has all sorts of rules. It says, here are the things you can't touch, here are special days that you have to observe as holy days, and here are certain foods that you can't eat. And Paul says, actually, this form of religion, although appearing very, very godly, is actually quite ineffectual in bringing about human change. Instead, he says, you have to consider yourself co-resurrected with Christ already. You have to remember that you're already holy and beloved. You have to put to death those things which belong to your former manner of life. And having made that great spiritual understanding of change, you will receive power to live differently. And one of the key parts of that is to think about heaven. And as I've already alluded to today, I don't find it easy to think of heaven. It's not very often a particularly enticing image. All that harp playing and sitting on clouds. And if we're being honest, the whole idea of living for eternity does seem a little bit daunting. How are you going to begin to fill the time? Because if all you're doing is harp playing, even after a couple of months, we're going to be a little bit bored and our fingers are going to be a little bit sore. And the thought of doing that for a further billion years isn't going to be particularly enticing. So one of the things that the Bible encourages us to do is to have more concrete images of what heaven is like. And suddenly that eternity doesn't quite seem to be quite so daunting. There was a man called Stephen Anderson, who some of you might have heard of. His family owned an estate over at Kirkmichael. And he was a soldier, he was in the Royal Scots Guineas. And then he came to faith. He was a bit of a brute, and his wife prayed for him and prayed for him and prayed for him, and one night he became a Christian. And he had quite a radical change in his life, and he was determined to share the Christian faith with musicians. And he had a real heart for musicians in Dundee. He worked with Ricky Ross, who was in Deacon Blue, and for skiers. And he used to go up the ski slopes in Cairngorm and preach to the skiers. He was an evangelist. And he taught me to ski. He was well into his 70s by the time he taught me to ski. Amongst the things I remember from skiing, he used to dribble quite a lot. I don't know if that's because he was 70 or whether he'd always done that. But it used to freeze. So he used to have these kind of lines of frozen saliva down his cheek as he taught me to ski. And he'd have all these military imagery. He would say, I want you to imagine, as you plant your pole in the snow, that 43 electrical volts are going through your bottom. And you kind of go like this, you ski. And the other thing you had to do was face downhill, and you go, face the enemy! And we'd all go skiing down. He almost killed me once. He took me to the edge of a glacier to show us crevasses. Here's a crevasse! And didn't leave us enough time to turn. I've been skiing for a few weeks, and it always slipped off this ice shelf. Stephen's not bothered. Stephen Anderson he was well into his 70s. He was skiing in Tignes in France about 10 years ago, I think. He was with a friend of mine, a guy called Lord McGray. And on the journey up on the gondola, they began to talk about what the skiing would be like in heaven. So we're doing this kind of thing that we're doing, making images of heaven more concrete. And they've probably talked about powder, and talked about how the bumps would be really good, and how you'd always have good visibility, so it would all snow at night. So it must be night in heaven, because that's when it has to snow. And all these things. And skiing down the mountain, having thought about this concrete image of heaven, Stephen had a heart attack and died. And people reckoned that was probably just about as good a death as you could possibly hope for. You know, having spoken about heaven and skiing, and then mid-ski, he dies. And I have this almost image of him, almost of me not noticing. You know, he skis, And then, as soon as possible, he skis down France, and by the time he gets to the bottom of the run, he's in heaven. But I like that idea of the concreteness of heaven. Now, skiing might not work for you, so go to gardens, or go to children playing next to adults, or go to the idea of a renewed body. But when you think of the things of heaven, think of peace. And Paul says, think of these things, and you will become less attached to the kind of false allegiances of earth. And walking in a godly way will become easier to you. We'll come to that later on. So the first thing I want to suggest is to think of heaven, is think of the concrete. The second thing I want to suggest, which also you alluded to, is to think of heaven as restored relationship. I have buried three stillborn babies. Two of them were within 10 days of each other, and the other one was in the same year. And on each of these occasions, I always went to a story of David. I love David. And King David in the Bible, he sleeps with Bathsheba, who's not his wife. And I think arranges for Bathsheba's husband Uriah to be killed. And they have a baby. And the baby dies. David moans. David's very sick for a while. And David fasts and he prays for his baby to live. And it doesn't live. And his servants come to him with the terrible news that the baby has actually died. And they're saying to each other, if David was like this when the baby was very ill, what is it going to be like now? And they come and tell David this terrible, devastating news. And David, to their surprise, picks himself up and puts his clothes on. And they say, why? And he says, I have a conviction that the baby will not return to me, but I will go to him. He will not return to me, but I will go to him. This guy, who is both an adulterer and a murderer, who is going through one of the worst moments of his life, has this moment of spiritual insight that he will go to this child. And I spoke about that verse in all three of those funerals. And for me, it brings comfort. That heaven is a place where relationship is restored. Every love in this world will be fractured in some way. Some, it will be the grisliness and non-connection that we live with the people around us now. For others, it will be people who were gone too early. For others, it will be simply be that the path of life brought us close for a while and then apart. There's a lady who spoke to me once about the church that my mum and dad are in. And this lady was in her 80s. And she said, could you find out about a plaque of a man who's named on the wall of that church? Because he was my fiancé. And we were engaged for a short time. We were completely unsuitable for one another. And it should be added that this lady had a very, very happy marriage afterwards. And I think she'd been quite young when this engagement had happened. So it was about 70 years ago. And she said, I'd like to know what happened to him. And I thought, imagine that. You've been happily married for 70 years. The engagement only lasted a few months. And yet you still yearn for this man you knew 70 years ago. And all of us have those names. They won't be on the walls of my parents' church, but they'll be somewhere of people we knew for a while, and then life moved on, and we just liked to reconnect with them. And I think heaven is the place where relationships are reconnected. And love is allowed to run its course in a way that earth didn't allow. And I think when you begin to think of heaven like that, you begin to think, oh well, that, the thought of all that time doesn't become quite so daunting, because there'll be so many relationships to attend to. So the first way that I think it's easier to think about heaven is to think of the concrete. The second way is to think of relationships being restored. The third is to think of the portals of heaven that creep into earth. And I think that's what you were alluding to when you see so much of heaven in this area here. In the grandeur of nature, we sense heaven. There are also other little portals. I get it when I listen to Forey's Requiem. I often listen to Forey's Requiem when I write funeral tribute. And Forey's Requiem ends with In Paradisum, which is the angel voices singing and there's harps. And that redeems, by the way, about the harps for me. But certain things on the earth take you to heaven. It could be maths or science. You know, the mathematicians and the scientists have discovered that there are probably something like 11 dimensions. So the idea that there are more dimensions to this existence is, for me, a portal of heaven. Or even, well, they're not daft wee things. When my granny lived in Largs in the 1970s, we used to go and visit her, and car journeys were a lot longer in those days. And I've since discovered my dad's driving was at fault. Every turn was kind of edged with kind of sickness. And we lived in our growth, and you know, Kilburnley was normally sick at, or something like that. And we'd get to Largs, and I don't know if you know Largs, it'd be that happy moment where you went down the Hayley Way, which is the kind of entrance to Largs. And we'd get to my gran's, and the thing we were always most excited about getting to my gran's was my gran's cat, Cindy. For some reason, I don't really like cats in later life, sorry for the cat lovers amongst you. But in those days, we were desperate to see Cindy. And the other thing was, Cindy wasn't even my gran's cat, but she used to leave food out for us. This kind of ginger cat called Cindy. We'd, oh, where's Cindy? We used to love picking up Cindy and all the rest. That's what we looked forward to. So we associated my gran with Cindy. Anyway, my gran died in the early 2000s, I think it was 2002. No, Sam was still alive, so it was 2005. My mum was in Port Seton the day after my gran had died. And she was washing her dishes in the kitchen. There was a wall next to the kitchen. And along the wall came a ginger cat. Now, my mum had never ever seen this ginger cat before in her life, and I don't think she's ever seen it since. And this ginger cat walked along the wall, stared at my mum for a few minutes, and then walked on again. And for my mum, so this was a moment of just thinking, I think that was some kind of spiritual experience. Now, you could say that's coincidence, or, you know, there could have been lots of things that would have happened. My experience is when people have these things happen to them, they actually try to not believe that they're true, because you don't want to be a fool. You know, if my mum knew that I was telling a story this morning, she'd be mortified. but it's, there's something inescapable. When my brother-in-law Matt died, we associated rainbows with him, and for the days afterwards, there were rainbows all over the place. There are these portals, these moments where heaven comes near, and I think those make it easier to believe in heaven. I think worship does too. When I had a friend called Mary who died, Mary had been with me in a group called the Wild Goose Worship Group, and we'd sung lots of songs together. We collected them often from abroad, including many from South Africa. And we sang many apartheid songs. One of them became quite well known, We Are Marching in the Light of God. But we used to gather together every Monday night. John Bell was the leader, but Mary was one of the other key people in that group. And we'd sing all these different songs from South Africa or songs that John had written. Those were really special times. And Mary got cancer, I think, about 10 years ago, but she'd had a nice think for many years she didn't think she'd get together with anybody, and then she got married in her 40s, and then she had kids in her 40s, but then she got cancer. And for about the last 5 years of her life, she lived with cancer. And the round that you all know about, chemotherapy and treatments and so on. And in the last year of her life, she knew that she didn't have long life. So she had a whole group of friends. She lived up in Ellen in Aberdeenshire, but Mary was one of these people who had really strong friendships. And the people would drive miles to go and see her. And what Mary would do with several of her close female friends was she would plan her funeral. And one of the things she did in planning her funeral was planning the hymns, because that had been a big part of Mary's life. And she went through the entire hymn book with her friends, working out. So there's 800 hymns in that hymn book. She went through every single one of them, working out what hymns she wanted in her funeral. At the end of the funeral, she got it, at the end of the time, she got it down to 9 hymns. We had 9 hymns at Mary's funeral. And there was something of heaven about that. There was something of heaven about the fact that we in the Wild Goose Worship Group, we'd met in the Monday nights with Mary. Before the service, we all got together to rehearse. And in singing the hymns, it was like time went back and we were transported to this living room in Glasgow 30 years ago. But the time that really spoke to me of heaven was at the end of the service, for various reasons, there was going to be no service at the crematorium. So Mary was just going to go by herself to the crematorium. And quite a few folk weren't happy about that. And it was one of these kind of things where there was a kind of tension between various people. But Mary was just going to go out to church, and the original plan was by herself and go to the crematorium. And eventually it was decided, no, the worship group would stay in. And we, and a whole bunch of other folk who'd been part of her life, stayed in. And Mary's coffin was taken out of the church, and John began to sing. And he began to sing a South African freedom song. Oh, freedom is coming. Oh, freedom is coming. Oh, freedom is coming. Oh, yes, I know. And we sang it for Mary. And I have never felt the truth of those words more than when we sang those in that church. And that was a moment when at last I got past the idea that if we were going to sing songs in heaven, that was actually going to be quite a good thing as well. Because there was something about that moment where heaven was unveiled. There are a number of hymns in the hymn book that speak of heaven that we don't sing very often. And this is part of the reason why I wanted you to have a pen as well. And you might like to go to some of these in your spare time. I wrote down the numbers. They're all the 700s. Oh, here we go. 746 is called "There is a Place That's Filled with Little Children." 746. There's an old Victorian hymn which used to be sung when child mortality was a much more prevalent. People used to sing about heaven's a place for little children, so that people could accept that maybe their brother or their sister was in heaven with Jesus. And when the shooting happened in Dunblane Primary, John wrote this hymn here, 746, "There is a Place." And you'll see that the hymn tune is called Dunblane Primary. The other one that all the section A might be appropriate, there's "For All the Saints." I haven't written down the number of that, that's got a lot of verses. There's one which is 733, which was written after a girl called Jennifer died when she was a child, and it's for the death of a child. 733, "We Cannot Hold You." Also, and I haven't written down the number, there's one called "We Cannot Measure How You Heal," and that goes to the tune of "The Banks and Braes." And then finally, in the hymn book 735, there's one called "Go Silent Friend," which I've often said at funerals. 735, "Go Silent Friend." Now in the hymn book it doesn't have a tune, but you can sing it to the Londonderry air, which is Danny Boyne. So 746, "There's a Place." 733, "We Cannot Hold You." And 735. Finally, this is a wee hard thing, but it's true, and it's in the passage. The final thing to help us think about heaven is to come to terms with death. I sometimes ask people who wants to go to heaven in church? And normally everybody sticks a hand up and give them the alternatives. I quite like to go to heaven. You then say, who'd like to go there tomorrow? Most hands come down at that point. Somebody once said, I'd like a week trip. I'd like to go for a week, just and then I'll come back. Because thinking about it, it's quite hard because we haven't come to terms with death, all of us. But I remember once I did this, and a woman called Janet Morris, it was in Belfast, absolutely stuck her hand up. And Janet had a very serious heart condition the year before and had almost died. But she had made her peace with death. And she was ready to go. And I think that's what Paul means when he says, in Christ you have died and you've already been raised. He's telling the Colossians, make your peace with death. He also says, the old self has gone and the new has come. The old self, we let that go when we come to terms with the fact that there are things in this life we're not going to get. It might be the job you always wanted. It might be the thing in your family that you always wanted. It might be the property that you always wanted. There will be things in our lives that we wanted that we did not get. And I think death is learning to accept that and somehow to give it to Jesus so that he can say, yes, you didn't get that, but in heaven you will have something more. I think we can set our eyes on heaven when we begin to conceive of heaven in more concrete terms. I think we can set our eyes on heaven more easily when we begin to sense that it's the place where all relationships are brought back together. I think we begin to sense heaven more easily when we attune ourselves to those indications of heaven that break through into earth. I think we attune ourselves to heaven more easily when we begin to conceive of worship in its most enlivening terms. And I think we begin to set ourselves towards heaven when we consider that we have already died and been raised with God.